Here's our tool, right? How many of you play with it? Getting the gist of it a little bit? I'm just putting it instead of my iPad so that you guys can see where the cursor is. Otherwise, with my iPad, you don't know where my finger is, you know, when I click. That cursor is over there. So let's solve a transmission line problem using a Smith chart. Instead of telling you what the Smith chart is, let's just use it and you'll figure it out, okay? So basically, I will solve the following example, step by step. We'll see how much we go. I have a transmission line. It is terminated by a 50 plus J 100 ohm resistance, or impedance, I must say, inductive one. It's riding on a transmission line with 100 ohm characteristic impedance. And it has some length, we'll decide that later on. This is my ZL. My little ZL, this is the normalized version of this with respect to the characteristic impedance, is 50 plus J100 divided by 100. That gives me 0.5 plus J1.0. That's my normalized impedance, okay? Remember now, the Smith chart is nothing but the unit circle in the complex gamma plane, where gamma is the reflection coefficient, that has been gridded such that you can identify a mapping of every impedance from the impedance plane into this circle, okay? All right, so I want to locate this normalized impedance of 0.5 plus J10, okay? And then I pay attention to these green and blue things, okay? This circle that I am just now seeing, this circle, is the real part equals one circle. The green circles correspond to imaginary parts, okay? And what I want is really 0.5 for the real part and J1.0 for the imaginary part. So I need to find this circle for the real one, 0.5 circle. I'm going to land myself on 0.1 circle, whatever that circle is intersecting the other green circle that corresponds to J1, that's where I want to be, okay? I want to be right there. Okay, I'm going to go and click there. All right. Now, on a Smith chart, if you have a piece of a Smith chart in front of you, a paper, you identify the same point and put a dot, okay? But after you put a dot, you draw a circle that passes through that dot with the center of the circle at the center of the Smith chart. The center of the Smith chart is this location, and this location actually reads an impedance. Jim, can you read what that impedance is?
One?
Plus zero J, exactly. And one plus zero J means that a load that has been exactly the same as the characteristic impedance, okay? We call that the match point, okay? If your Z sub L equals your Z sub zero, you have a match in the sense that the reflection coefficient would be equal to zero. So the center of the Smith chart is this match point, right there, okay? And then we learned that this was a short and this was an open, okay? So those are three important points to identify. So I have now placed myself in this location that I want to be. That's corresponding half plus J1, and I'm going to just click there. And then this tool draws that circle for me, okay? The circle that you would have drawn using your compass, this does it for me, okay? Because I know this is always what I want to do, okay? So now, I will go from the load point, load point, exactly. D equals zero towards the generator. And I'm going towards the generator, I travel on the Smith chart in a clockwise direction. This is something that we discussed yesterday, okay? Do you remember why we go clockwise rather than minus counterclockwise? Because the relationship for the gamma is gamma L times e to the minus J to beta D. As D is increasing, the angle of the complex number gamma is decreasing, and that is by our conventions means that we are coming complex numbers with lesser and lesser angles means that we have to go clockwise. All right, so now I'm going to go clockwise for a while, and then to make this problem simple, I'm going to go this amount and click right here. If I click right there, okay, I find a new impedance. My impedance, my normalized impedance changed. I started with this guy, 0 plus J10. I went over a distance, and we'll figure out how much distance I went. And I ended up with a new Z. I'm going to call Z of little d. And that is actually 4.2 plus J0 affected. I wanted to go, like, there is exactly there a zero valued imaginary part impedance, a purely real impedance. That's what I wanted to go. I was not so careful in clicking it. So I'm in that vicinity, that's good enough. And invariably I get the question from the students while they are doing Smith chart, well, how accurate do we have to be with our pencil and paper and the compass? And I say, try to be as accurate as you can, but you know, it's not the end of the world. Just there's going to be some uncertainty that's relative or scales with the thickness of your pencil tip and all that, okay? Be reasonably close, but don't be too sloppy, but you don't have to be asinine about it either. All right, so that's where we are. So I will say that my new location is, and I did this at home in my office correctly as I could, is 4.191 plus J0, okay? And the corresponding rotation I had was a certain number of angles, but it was also given in my tool. It is given in terms of fractions of a wavelength. I have 0.115, okay, lambda. I rotated about 0.115, well, almost 10% of a lambda. Yesterday we said that if you go full circle, it is half a lambda. Half a circle is a quarter lambda, okay? And then quarter circle is 1/8 of a lambda. So this is a little bit less than a quarter of a, 1/8 of a lambda, right? It's not 90 degrees, it looks like I went something like 80 degrees or so, all right? All right, so, and then my D that goes along with this is 0.115 lambda. So now I have made my choice for this particular circuit. I'm just like building a circuit, playing around. It is meant to illustrate how we use the Smith chart. Later on, you will be solving problems rather than making up problems. Okay, so this distance is now 0.115 lambda. And we have the input impedance. Actually, we have the normalized input impedance. So what do I do to get into the actual impedance? I take the normalized impedance and multiply it by the characteristic impedance. So I'm going to take basically 4.19 and multiply it with 100. That's going to give me 400 something. Okay? So then I continue with my quest here. Z in. I might as well call this Z in now. This is the input, Z in. Is this quantity times 100 that gives me 419.1 ohms. Yes? So you go from impedance to normalized impedance by dividing by characteristic impedance, and you undo that by multiplying. Okay? So now let's finish our circuit. So we know that now we are looking into this circuit. We had a load of 50 plus J, 100, and which was an inductive load. We have a purely resistive load, it looks, at 0.115 away from that, that has an input impedance of purely resistive 400 or so ohms. That's what the situation is. 419. Suppose that we have a generator here that has an internal resistance of 100 ohms, and it also has an AC voltage that is characterized by 100 volts at 0 degree angle. I'll just say 100 volts. Okay, that's an AC source, and I have the phasor there. So now I ask myself, what about my input voltage, Vin? Vin, okay? So let me get rid of this for a moment. We are not using it much. See, what we did was two things, right? We started, drew a circle, went around the circle, did a new reading. That's it. This is always what you do with a Smith chart, basically.
You start your circle at just one with the...
No, I started my... the first thing I did was I entered the point. Right. That point was the point that corresponded to complex number 0.5 plus J1. That was very crucial. Okay? If you have a Smith chart in front of you, just put a dot there. 0.5 plus J1. Okay? So now you know how to enter complex numbers. Okay, right. That's a normalized impedance that you enter. The second thing that you do is you draw a circle. That circle corresponds to a constant generalized reflection coefficient circle going through that point. Because we learned last lecture that as you move in the actual physical transmission line from node towards the generator, generalized reflection coefficient changes as a complex number, but only its angle changes. Its magnitude doesn't change. Therefore, a circle. Okay?
How do you know the radius of that circle?
That radius of the circle is defined by your compass. Your compass picks out that radius, my friend. In other words, you don't have to calculate the, you can of course calculate the generalized reflection coefficient magnitude using the reflection coefficient formula, which is z log minus z naught divided by the sum. Okay? And that's always going to be a number less than 1, and it's going to be the number that you see over there, 0.6. My tool is telling you this. The length of this arrow is 0.6. If this arrow went from the center all the way to the edge, it would be 1.
So we put one point of our compass on 1, and then we put the other one there, and we thought
it's. Yes. Okay. The circle is always centered around the center of the smidgen,
okay,
which is the point that I refer to as the match point. Okay, once again, short, right, short, match, open. Okay? You always draw your circle with the compass going around the match point. Okay, that gives you, in other words, don't be confused about the Smith chart. Okay, the Smith chart, because of all the markings on it, always reminds you this is an impedance or admittance coordinate system. But that is not the only thing. Don't be just confused by that. This is also the complex gamma plane.
Yeah.
Okay? More importantly, this is the complex gamma plane. And the center, the match point, corresponds to the gamma being exactly is equal to 0. If the reflection coefficient is 0, that means you have a match. When you have a match, you have no reflection coefficient. Okay? Any non-zero reflection coefficient is going to change as a complex number through its angle as you go around the circle, as you go on the Smith chart. But if you have a match at the load, you're going to be right at the center of that Smith chart, and however much you go away from that load, you are still going to stay at the same point, because then you'll be turning around on the same point, you have no radius. You're going to have always the same impedance, okay? So that's the good lesson. If your load is matched to the characteristic impedance of your transmission line, no matter how long that transmission line, the input impedance is always equal to the load equals characteristic impedance of the line. So that. But usually in practice, you don't have this match. Therefore, you are on a circle that you have to draw. Okay? Now you know how to draw that circle. And always you draw a circle, and then you go from on that circle either towards the generator or towards the load. Most of the times towards the generator, as we have done. Then you go clockwise until. And you go, how much do you go? You go the length of the line, okay? In general, I will give the length of the line in a problem. I'll say 0.20 lambda. So you go 0.20 lambda, okay? In this problem, I said, let me go to a point where I have purely real impedance, and I will now read how long that distance is. And I found that distance to be 0.115 lambda. Now, I got that number because I wrote this computer program that is helping me. You don't have that computer program. You have that piece of paper. On that piece of paper, you're going to figure out that it is 115, right? Brian, can you figure out how it is 115? You should, because you remember that if you go around once, it's half.
Right, yeah.
If you go around halfway,
it's quarter.
And you scale it, okay? Now, there are markings on the periphery that will help you with that scaling, my friend. Let's look at that. Give me a Smith chart here. Look at these markings on the periphery. On the periphery, you're going to see 360 degrees in one scale. You know, it goes plus and minus 180 degrees. You have things marked in terms of angles. But you also have things marked in terms of the fractions of a wavelength. Do you see that? The very outside marking is wavelengths towards the generator. It starts with 0 at the short end, and numbers just keep increasing. So you have a ruler. From that ruler, you can figure out how much. Okay? So basically, you have your half plus J1 point, you draw your circle, and then on the circle, you stop here, and then you look at the two numbers on the periphery to figure out from their difference that you have moved 0.115 lambda. This is a very important point. You know, I'm glad he asked the question, so I was able to answer it rather than lecturing about it. Okay, this is very important. Of course, you get sick and tired of this, and we have no computer. It's not 1930, so I wrote this thing. It is giving me the same information. Okay, so in this tool, okay, I have my original entry. Okay, 0.5 plus J1. That was my impedance. Right next to it is another number, okay? That number has a magnitude of 0.61. That is the magnitude of my reflection coefficient. Okay? My reflection coefficient would, from here to here, would mean 1, because this is a unit circle. So you can scale that. So if you look at the bottom of the Smith chart that we have here, there is a scale that is just like a ruler, okay? That goes from 0 to 1. This is not my Smith chart. This is somebody else's Smith chart. It is not standard. I want my Smith chart so that you guys can all talk about the same thing. Of course, once you download Smith chart from the web, there's going to be all sorts of different ones. Please look at this scale on the top, okay? That goes from 0 to 1.0, and it is a linear scale, okay? That is a scale to read your VSWR. To read your magnitude of reflection coefficient, right? Once you draw that circle with your compass, right? Don't change the opening of your compass. With the same opening, come to that bottom thing, tick something, and learn out that you have 6.1 reflection coefficient. Okay, so you don't have to do actual algebra. It's all something you can do here with your compass and this archaic 70, 80, 100, whatever, not 100, but 80-year-old invention. But that 80-year-old invention is being captured into, you know, 2-year-old invention written in JavaScript. And why are we going through this? We are going through this because in your next courses, when you use network analyzers, impedances will all be graphically displayed to you on Smith charts. Okay? It is a very efficient way of describing impedances on a very little landscape, all right? Real estate. Infinity possibilities of impedances are being sort of like portrayed in one very efficient way. So this is why you need to sort of learn how to read and use. I hope it survives. Okay. All right, so that's it, yes.
What if the problem was that you didn't know the characteristic impedance? Where would you begin?
Well, you have to know characteristic impedance. As in all problems, if there is an unknown, everything else is known, perhaps you can figure it out. Those are inverse problems. But typically, you will know your characteristic impedance. Moreover, typically, your characteristic impedance is going to be 50 or 100 or 75. All right. Anyway, any questions? So you have to normalize it. Okay. All right. So, inverse problem, you know what an inverse problem is. I can be mean and give you an inverse problem. I said, here are some points on the Smith chart, and figure out what the characteristic impedance was. It's a legit question, and I think you can do it. Any questions now? So, I think I talked too much, because I have to say many other things, but I want to continue with this problem a little bit. And I talk too much because Brian asks questions, and Brian's questions lead to other questions. These are good things, ways of getting comfortable with this concept. So let's just now get the input voltage. My input voltage is going to be a voltage division here. I know the input impedance, I know the source impedance, voltage division. Okay, so my V in or V of D, if you want, in this notation, is going to be 100 volts multiplied by 419.1 ohm divided by that plus 100. That is 519. And I punched this into my IPython, and it gave me an 80.73 volts. It's purely real because I doctored the problem so that it is purely. It could have been imaginary. Had I stopped at any other location, my impedance would have been complex, and I would have had a complex number. But that's my input voltage. All right, so I want to do something more than that, okay? So I'm sort of like curious to find out what is the load voltage at this point, V sub L, okay? For that purpose, I have to reinterpret my input voltage and do some sort of inverse solution, okay? And what is my V in? I need more blackboards, so let me just now say what my V in is. My V in, which I know to be 80 volts or so at this point. 80.73 volts. Is now I have to think. I have to think a little bit D'Alembert, I have to think a little bit all this plus and minus. I superposed forward and backward going ways. And then I did some factorization. I'm going to write down what it is, and you're going to just nod your head and say, yeah, I think this is correct, okay? My V in is this thing, which really was the forward going wave, plus the backward going wave. But I can write the backward going wave as the forward going wave times the generalized reflection coefficient that is appropriate for that point, just like Ryan is saying. So it is 1 plus gamma. That's it, okay? And which gamma is this? Gamma of D. That's where we were, because this is at the D point. Okay? So now, we know this as a number. We can solve for this guy. Well, let's solve for that. So V plus then is going to be 80.73. When I put this on the other side, it becomes e to the minus j beta d. It's a phase term. Its magnitude is 1. If ultimately I'm just going to worry about the magnitude, it's not going to play much of a role, but it should be there. Divided by 1 plus gamma d. And 1 plus gamma d is something that I should sort of like visualize in terms of that Smith chart that I made disappear for a moment. I'll bring this back. What is V minus, Brian? Now that I know V plus, what is V minus? V minus is the amplitude of the backward going wave, reflected wave, but it can be obtained from V plus by multiplying it with? No. V plus, I can get by V minus by multiplying V plus with the reflection coefficient.
Yeah.
Load reflection coefficient, or the generalized reflection coefficient at d equals 0. Let's call it gamma of 0, okay? Now, next question. If we know V plus and V minus, what is V of 0? V of 0 is the load voltage, and what is V of 0? Tell me.
Superposition.
Of what and what?
V plus and V minus.
Do we need betas? Yes or no?
I don't think so.
You don't think so? Tell me why you don't think so. Because? Because D is equal to 0 at the load point. E to the right. J plus and minus J beta D evaluates to 0 at the load point. That's why we put the load at the 0 end. It made life convenient for us at this point. Okay? So now, given this, and given the following, V of 0, this is the load voltage, V sub L. Is simply V plus plus V minus, okay? So therefore, if I substitute this here, and then I use here, let's see what we get. It's 80.73 e to the minus j beta d, and then I have, because of the superposition, I am gonna get 1 plus gamma of 0, Brian. That goes into the numerator. Into the denominator goes 1 plus gamma of d. And that's the answer. Now, we know 80, so let's say that we only care at this point about the magnitude, we don't care about the phase angle. Phase angle can be calculated from this term and also from this term. Maybe something here is complex, okay? Now, I think my 1 plus gamma sub d was not complex, but the other thing is going to be complex. You have to visualize that, and I'll help you visualize that on the Smith chart, okay? But I can now, let me now go to this side and say absolute value of the load voltage, which is the absolute value of that quantity, is equal to 80.73. I don't care about the e to the j beta d term anymore. And then the absolute value of 1 plus gamma of 0 divided by absolute value of 1 gamma of d. I wrote this here. Because now I'm going to interpret this guy's in terms of the Smith chart that we sort of need to look at once again. So it is at this point, I want us to remember what is gamma of 0 and what is gamma of d as complex numbers. Jason, it is at this point you remember that the Smith chart is nothing but the complex gamma plane. On this complex gamma plane, I have my red arrow that represented the load point reflection coefficient. That's where I started, because that's how I entered my load impedance, normalized load impedance. It immediately gave me that connection from the origin to that point as the
Is it coming back to life?
No.
Oh, yeah, we are on the wrong machine. The PC went to sleep. I have two machines here, and the PC decided to go to sleep because we haven't worked with it quite a while. What was I saying, John? I was saying that there are two reflection coefficient lines that I see. One is the red one, the other this one. This guy is the input point one, and this one is the load point one. Okay? So, let me sort of erase parts of this and make a cartoon here. Okay? So our Smith chart is sort of like this. I like these doing Smith chart cartoons. You should learn how to do that too. You make one big circle, and then you make a small circle like this, and you know that that is corresponding to R equals 1 circle. Then x equals 1 circle, and x equals minus 1 circle are like this. Then there are many other circles just like that. If we go back to the actual thing over there, we had a generalized reflection coefficient for the load n that was just like this. And after we circulated 0.115 lambda, we ended up at this point. So we had two different generalized reflection coefficient complex numbers sitting graphically in front of us. What we want is the absolute value of these complex numbers plus the real number 1. Right? We want the absolute value of 1 plus gamma 0, 1 plus gamma of d. Okay? In the complex, in the Smith charts, remembering that it's the unit circle, it is the unit circle on the complex gamma plane, I can interpret a segment, a line arrow that I draw like this, from here to here, from the short point to the center point, as the real number 1. Complex addition is similar to vector additions. We add vectors by putting things tip to tip. Complex addition is pretty much the same thing, okay? If we have two complex number representations as arrows, and we add them tip to tip. So I claim that 1 plus gamma of d that I need to take its absolute value is this plus this, which adds to this. This is crucial. Is that clear, James? Is that clear? Okay, so now, what really I want here is the length of this guy. The other thing I need is this guy. And what is that? That is 1 plus gamma of 0. It's this thing. Okay, so I have one length here and another length there. I want those lengths and divide them. Now, Brian, can you tell me what numerically this length is?
1.6.
Exactly. Because Brian knows this is 1, and he already remembers this is 6, 1.6. So that's what 1.6 is. Now, what about this number, this length? That's more complicated, okay? You have to have some, complex computation capabilities. But you don't want that complex number. You want its length. You only want its length. So why don't you take a ruler that is working either in inches or centimeters or your favorite units. Okay, in those units, you make a measurement of this thing, so many centimeters, and then you make a measurement of this in the same units. Okay, you take their ratio. That ratio is what you enter here. So our 1930s engineers had certainly rulers. They could measure things this way. So they really made use of this technique. Now, what goes to the numerator is this length. This is Brian's 1.6. What goes into the denominator is this length, which you can visually see to be shorter. So the ratio that we will be multiplying, that 80, is going to be larger than 1. Yes, thank you.
How did you get the 0.6? No, 1.6.
Ask Brian. Brian, can you explain?
It's from our reflection coefficient that the 0.615 actually equates to the length of the pink line.
Your name is Yarber, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Yarber. First name?
Michael.
Michael Yarber. So, Mike, this entire circle that we draw as the constant gamma circle has a radius of 0.615.
Okay.
Okay? We know that radius is also this radius. You add 1 to it, and that's Brian's solution.
Okay.
Okay? But the other length is not 1.6. It's shorter than that. You can visually see that. Okay? You can visually see, but you can't guess it. You need a ruler. You use the ruler, you're done. Okay? So let me give you the final result in this calculation. So as Brian said, this is 1.615. The denominator works out to be 1.24. Okay, and that ratio times 80.73 gives me approximately 104.89 volts. That's the answer for the magnitude of the load voltage. Now, the input voltage of the transmission line was about 80-ish. My source voltage was 100 in magnitude. I ended up with a load voltage that is bigger than both of them. Sounds like magic, doesn't it? But that's just the way it works. This was first noticed by some Italian guy called Ferranti, and this is called Ferranti effect. Okay? This is a point, this is a distance for which there is an amplification of the voltage. Okay? But at the same time, the current at that point is a little bit weak. So that the current times voltage product, which is power, is going to be the same as everywhere else. There will be other locations on the Smith chart or on the transmission line where the voltage is going to be weaker than this and the current is going to be larger than whatever the current is. You still have the same power, okay? It is the power that needs to be sort of conserved, and there is no voltage conservation law, so to speak, at any given point. Of course, there is a sort of a voltage-related concept, KVL, going around, but that is still an energy conservation rule if you think about it. So this is my solution here. Any questions? Well, yes?
Why is not 1.6 for 1 plus gamma 2?
Because in one of them, I go all the way from here to here.
Yeah,
in the other one, I go from here to there.
So the upper one is 1.6.
The upper one is 1.6. Yes, the bottom one is 1.24. The bottom one is sort of like close to Pythagorean theorem. It's not exactly Pythagorean theorem because it's not 90 degrees. So how do you do that? You add the complex number, okay, which has imaginary part and a real part, and then, so you take 1.6 times cosine and sine of that angle that is about 80-ish degrees. You have to do a lot of math, okay? You bypass that math by using your ruler. You see, therefore, the genius of those early engineers, you know, they didn't have calculators and computers yet, but they had their rulers and they could do the stuff. That's how we made progress. Very impressive, I might say. All right, so anyway, any other questions? So let's move on. Okay, so I want to now harp on something magnificent here. On this constant gamma circle, as we are moving back and forth on this transmission line circuit, we are going through all sorts of complex valued little z's, okay? But there are two points on the Smith chart, corresponding two points that periodically repeat themselves on the transmission line itself, where this little z is purely real. One of them is this point that we took advantage of already. The other one is this point, okay? So not only these are two points where z is purely real, they happen to be the bounds of the absolute value of z that you will find on that circle. As you travel on that circle, you'll encounter all sorts of complex valued z's, but you can, every time you see a new one, you can look at this magnitude. Those magnitudes are going to have a range, and they will have the bigger ones and the smaller one. Well, the biggest one, ladies and gentlemen, is this one. And the smallest one is this one. And this is also, you just read it from here, this is a little bit bigger than 0.2. This is the 0.2 circle. My tool is giving it as 0.238 plus J0, okay? So 0.238 is the smallest impedance that you have on that line in the normalized sense. You can unnormalize it by multiplying with 100 if you wish, okay? Now, what is the significance of impedance being large versus impedance being small? When the impedance is large, the voltage to current ratio is large. When the impedance is small, the voltage to current ratio is small, okay? So regions of small impedance are where, in a sort of a superposed pattern, the current is the dominant one, whereas the voltage is the dominant one in the other one. In a full standing wave pattern that we looked at several lectures ago, we knew that the voltage maxes and current maxes, they are interlaced with a separation by, say, lambda over 4, yes. The maxes of voltage adjacent masses of voltage are separated by lambda over 2. Okay? The max of current is coming exactly halfway between the max two maxes, so successive maxes of the voltage. Therefore, the max to max current to voltage separation is lambda over 4, same as null to null. Okay? So then it is not surprising that when you go from this point with the max magnitude impedance, meaning voltage is dominating over current, to this point where the current is dominating over voltage, by going around a half circle corresponding to quarter wavelength, you're getting the hang of it. Okay? Any questions here? So now, I want to do the following. I want to prove, in some sense, that maximum value of little z sitting over there is indeed the maximum value. A little bit math, and then it will have some good impact. Little z, in general, is equal, this is z divided by z naught, is 1 plus gamma divided by 1 minus gamma. Okay? So if I take the absolute value of this, then I have to take the absolute values of both sides. Okay? And then if I say, what about the maximum value of this guy? How do I maximize it? I maximize it if this guy happens to be equal to 1 plus the magnitude of gamma, and the bottom happens to be 1 minus magnitude of gamma. Okay? And that will correspond to absolute value z max. Okay? But the absolute value of gamma is just a pure number, a real number. Okay? And that is the real number that corresponds to the radius of this circle. 1 plus that real number is this distance. That goes to the numerator. Into the denominator goes, in fact, 1 minus that distance. That 1 minus that distance is not this distance, but this distance. I go 1, and then subtract this amount. That gives me this length. Is that clear? So I have the biggest possible numerator I can get, and the smallest possible denominator I can get, and that is going to give me my maximum z that I'm looking for. Is that making sense, Samuel? Okay. Any questions? This value, where I am at the maximum value of z max, in the absolute value sense, which is a real number, which is now being portrayed here as this, is given one more name. It's the voltage standing wave ratio, VSWR. And old timers call it WSWR. If you see an old engineer with big belly and he says WSWR, and you say, what the hell is he saying? He's talking about this. Okay. What is WSWR? WSWR is the following. We talked about standing waves a couple of lectures ago. And in the standing waves, we have maxima and we have nulls. But full standing waves like that happen when the reflection coefficient is either plus 1 or minus 1. Okay? If you have a reflection coefficient whose magnitude is smaller than 1, such as 0.6, you are not going to have a full standing wave situation. You are going to have a partial standing wave situation. In a partial standing wave situation, you have those galloping waves that, you remember the galloping wave picture from the movie? That's what happens. What that really means is that if you have many, many observers on a transmission line like that, between the node and the generator end, each observer at this at each of their own locations are watching how the voltage is changing as a function of time, they all see oscillating voltages. They all oscillate with the same frequency, but they don't all reach the same amplitude. Some guys will see and report huge amplitudes. Some guys will report very small amplitudes. If it's a full standing wave, some people will report zero amplitudes. Okay? That is a full standing wave. But in a partial standing wave situation, that smallest one is not going to be zero. It's going to be some number. So you take the ratio of the largest reported amplitude to the smallest reported amplitude, and that is the voltage standing wave ratio. Now, if you have a purely traveling wave, okay, everybody sees the same amplitude. Therefore, when you take the largest and divide it by the smallest, what do you get? 1. You get 1. So that is the smallest standing wave ratio one could have. And that corresponds to a mesh. If you have a mesh, there is nothing reflected. Your VSWR is 1. If you don't have a mesh, you are going to have a VSWR that is larger than 1. If you have a full standing wave ratio, VSWR is the ratio of some finite number by 0, therefore infinity. So VSWR itself will go from 1 to infinity, and typically in a real life transmission system, you want your VSWR to be close to 1, as close as you can get, because as I have pointed out earlier on, transmitters complain when they see large VSWR. Any questions here? Okay, so let me now say a few more things about the VSWR more specifically. Okay, my voltage on the line anywhere is V plus times e to the j beta d 1 plus gamma of d. Alright, so VSWR has to do with the minimum and maximum values of this in magnitude sense. Okay, so VSWR is then the magnitude of V of d at wherever it maxes to the ratio of the voltage phasor, whatever it means. This is what it is. Okay? So if we first take the ratios and then take the absolute values, V pluses and e to the j beta d's all cancel out, we get this situation. 1 plus gamma of d max 1 plus gamma of d min. Okay? All right, so we already are primed to know what this max is. Okay, that max is going to correspond to this length. Okay, and we know also what is the smallest value this guy can achieve at another location. Actually, it's going to be 0.25 lambda away from the original point where we find the max. We're going to have this guy giving us not the plus, but the minus version. So this is going to be 1 plus gamma magnitude. This is going to be 1 minus gamma magnitude. That's the same thing as the thing that I derived here, somewhere here. They are the same things. This is why Z max is also equal to VSWR. Jim, did you follow? OK. So VSWR has, of course, a formula. The formula is this formula. But to use that formula, you first have to calculate gamma and take its magnitude and do that division, okay? You don't have to do any of that if you are using a Smith chart. You typically start with your load impedance, you normalize it, and you enter into the Smith chart. You put it here, boom, okay? And then you draw the circle. That circle is drawn for me immediately because it's a computer, right? But you can draw that circle very easily. Then you can read the number here, Z max. That Z max, normalized Z max value, is also voltage standing wave ratio. It's always that crossing, okay? Now, if you have very small reflections, then you're going to have very small reflection coefficient circles, and you're going to read smaller and smaller numbers that are approaching unity, okay? If you are at a pure match, your entire circle will collapse to a dot at the center, and if you still follow the same recipe, you're going to say, hey, my VSWR is 1. This is as good as it gets. Jason, are you with me? Okay, so and then if you look at the readings that you can have all the way from here to here, you start with 1, it becomes 2, it becomes 5, it becomes all the way to how? Infinity. And that's the realm of VSWR. Okay? Any questions? So VSWR, you just read it from the intersection of the constant gamma circle with the real axis of the complex gamma plane. Is that making sense, Brian? Huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
2.2.
Okay, but it is written. My tool gives you what it is. RVSWR here was 2. No, what? It was something bigger. I can't read it here. I have to move this around somehow. I don't know what it is. It's all covered. I have to start it again. Okay, so where did we start? This is where we started. 4.26. Okay? It is written there. You look at that crossing over. Okay, so one more thing we can do. Okay? Why don't we solve this equation for absolute value of gamma? Okay? you know, you can know gamma and you can go from gamma to SWR. Or alternatively, you can go to the lab and calculate the SWR, measure the SWR. How do you do it? You go with a probe at different location on the Smith chart, on the, sorry, not Smith chart, on the actual thing, the transmission line itself. You just look at, you make measurements of the voltages, you identify the biggest amplitude and the smallest amplitude. You divide and you have your PSWR. Now you say, what is the reflection coefficient that goes along with it? And you invert this equation. And then you invert that equation, you get something like this. Absolute value of gamma is equal to VSWR minus 1 divided by VSWR plus 1. Okay? So, if VSWR is equal to 1, which is the best thing that can happen, okay, match, your gamma is 0. And that's the inversion equation. Any questions? So, this relationship versus this relationship are exactly reflecting the same sort of transformation that you see between the reflection coefficient and impedance. No surprise, because VSWR is sort of, as we have shown, the maximum value of impedance. So it's sort of a like Mobius transformation equation there you see between the two. Okay? So, now, I want to apply all this into matching problems. But I'm going to do that tomorrow, and then we'll talk a little bit about lossy lines. That brings us more or less to the end of this semester. I need to do this course evaluation thing. So please do this. Nowadays, we are doing this in summer, too. It helps to have some feedback. Okay, so I'm going to assign the task to this Alex to collect all these things from everybody, and then take it to the Department Office, the secretaries, and the Department Office, you can give them. Okay? All right, so take some. Yes. On the final, you will have 4 sheets of papers. Don't worry about Smith chart. I will provide a Smith chart, but learn how to use Smith charts. I hope most of you did construct the Smith chart by hand. That is the surefire way of learning. Bring a calculator.
Do you care for rulers and protractors?
Yeah. Rulers, protractors, yeah. Somebody was sending me an email saying, why don't you make this exam like the fourth exam and nothing different? I don't know who it was. Is that person here in the class? Somebody was sending me an email saying, why don't you make the final exam exactly like a fourth exam and nothing more, nothing less? And I said, we'll talk about this in class. Is this person here? No. All right. Of course, you can't dictate what I want to do. I will do what I want. But I already promised you it was going to be a final exam that I'm going to make substantially easier than exam number 2 and 3. It is going to be a final exam with 5 questions. Okay? This is all leftovers? Okay. So, Alex, you will put everything back inside. Yes, let's go outside and let's just do this outside.